There are a number of apologies, and I'm not going to waste time. Most of the people are presently attending the meeting with the Justice Committee, which is also sitting at the start. We tried our best not to clash with the Justice Committee, but honourable members will be aware that there's a constituency period starting on Friday, and it is then going to make it impossible for us to sit for the next few days or the following week. I did indicate at the last meeting that we might apply for permission. But it seems that politically people are not happy to be sitting in the constituency period, so the best we could do was to arrange a number of meetings during this week in order to make up. There's also the additional problem that I would be sitting with the Judicial Service Commission from the 4th to the 13th of April. Which means for a few days in the second week in April, we've also been very interested in that to find yourself a substitute chair. All those things having been said, honourable members, for those of you who find it convenient or inconvenient to attend at this meeting, I can assure you that the staff has lost, and I myself looked very carefully into how to address the problems which I've raised. It seems that this was the only way in which to deal with the problem. We will be meeting on Friday. We've sought permission on Friday as a constituency day. We were also going to meet on Thursday, and I've been asked to look at that thing. At this stage, I can only offer that Thursday there will be a meeting, but I am prepared to look into the matter. I will speak to the Chairperson of Justice. I'll speak to the authorities and see what can be done about it. If those that have complained are successful, there will not be a meeting on Thursday. The meeting will then be on Friday. If you are unsuccessful, the meeting on Thursday will go ahead as well as the meeting on Friday. But I do undertake to try my best to sure that nobody is prejudiced in this matter. Honourable members, you will recall that at the last meeting we were being presented to by the Ministry of State Security, Mr. Dennis Bloomer. We reached the stage where we were had completed the general principles that we might have referred to them regarding the protection of information. And I think what we're going to be getting today is the individual countries and the best practice. I'm looking at some of the international practices in some of the more familiar and popular countries. I understand that we, in this presentation, because there was a concern that hostile activity would not be dealt with and what it actually constitutes, but I understand that this would be part of the presentation. What will follow then, once we finish the presentation, will be consideration of the presentation, what we are going to do, whether there is anything new in the presentation that needs to be addressed, might necessitate alterations or proposals to amendments to the bill as it now stands. I think that really was the intent. intention of the invitations to inform members of the committee of what is happening so that they can make decisions from an informed position. Honourable Amen, that really is the issue on the table today. I don't think there is a question or if there is something not related to what I have said that you have to request. If not, I want to hand over to Mr. Dennis Bloom from the Minister's Office. I understand that the Honourable Funkbeck has a question.
No, I don't have a question. It's related to something that you said. Unfortunately, not only the Justice Committee who are sitting, police is also sitting as we speak, and we're busy with budget. And our debate is on the 13th, and we need to adopt a report. So I'm just raising that I would have a problem with this as well.
I think the morning remains a caucus period for those people that caucus is also a workshop. Chairperson, so it will not be even after Mr. Rana at the same time, it will be 2 or 3 o'clock. 2 o'clock until the morning. As I say, I will report back on that one. And a lot depends also on how the presentation goes today. There is also the outstanding request from the Honourable Agostini, who wants to address us on the outstanding matter regarding classified information that has already landed up in the public domain. I understand that won't be a long presentation. I think it's more a point of view to the Honourable Member. I intend to take 5 minutes to finish with the presentation earlier the next day after that. Honourable Members, I think that's it for the first question. I'm handing over to Mr. Dennis Bloom.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, very good afternoon. May I start, Chairperson, by apologizing. The projector that we have has just run aground. We are trying to find a replacement projector. I would therefore request that Honourable Members use as their reference the documentation circulated last week. The point of discussion today will start on page 12, as I had presented up till Croatia. So today I would like, with the permission of the Chairperson and Honourable Members, to start with the United States of America.
The Chairperson. I'm just wondering, I'm just checking the Honourable Members that don't have a copy of this document. Anybody else? Members of the committee that don't have a copy of the document.
It must not be that I am responsible for it.
Mr. Plomo, is there a situation or an expectation that you're going to go live at some time, or are you going to present entirely now?
Inshallah, Chairperson, we hope to go live at some point.
What
would
you say to time? Let us proceed on the understanding that we will work on the document. We might go live at some time.
Right. Am I dead now? Honourable Members, may I kindly bring to your attention that there are a number of instruments that regulate the classification and access to information in the United States of America. What I have done, as I did in the case of the United Kingdom, I have summarized the key provisions of the various legislations and the executive order which was issued by the President of the United States in 2010. I want Chairperson to just do it slightly differently this time around and ask the question, why is the information in the case of the United States protected? What are the reasons for their classification of information? And so on page 12, the slide on the left-hand side at the bottom, the information in the United States of America is classified. Are we together?
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Member. It is to protect citizens, democratic institutions, homeland security, and interaction with foreign nations. So they make provision for classification on the following grounds, and they thus protect the following types of information: military plans, weapon systems or operations, foreign government information, intelligence activities including covert action, intelligence sources or methods or cryptology, foreign relations or foreign activities of the United States, including confidential sources, scientific, technological or economic matters relating to national security, the United States government programs for safeguarding nuclear material or facilities, vulnerabilities or capabilities of systems, installations, infrastructure, projects, plans or protection services relating to national security, the development, production or use of weapons of mass destruction. Who then classifies in the case of the United States? As I have already indicated, they've got a two-tier classification system. The first tier is driven by the originator, and this means that the originator of the information determines the minimum security classification level, and the classification authority can be the president, the vice president, agency heads and officials designated by the president, U.S. government officials delegated to classify information, and this delegation is limited to the minimum required to implement the executive order issued by the President of the United States, and the delegated officials must show a demonstrable need to classify. Where is it classified? It is classified at the point of creation or receipt if it is foreign government information or information from allies and other international actors, and also at the point of review of the level of classification. When is it classified? It is classified at the point of its creation or receipt. So they make sure that at no point does information move in the system without any classification. How is it classified? As I said, there are two processes for classification. There is the original classification authority, which is the limited number of persons that I have already talked about. And then there is the second level of classification, which we call the derivative classification authority. These people do not have the right of determining what is a secret. But during the process of making research and consulting classified documentation, they are expected to keep to the original classification that the information they are using contained. And the guideline is that the information must take the minimum security classification that is required. As indicated during the last presentation, Honorable Members, that there are very strict rules that guide the originator, those who've got the original classification authority. If you are going to be classifying top secret information, you must, on an annual basis, attend upgrading courses and updating courses for you to be able to do the classification. At the level of secret, you must attend every 2 years. If you cease to be up to date with the classification method, you are not allowed to classify and you are taken off the list of people with the authority to classify. So it is strictly regimented and controlled. There are a number of other issues, Chairperson, that I would have wanted to speak to, but I think at this point it's important to just stop by pointing at two things. That there are two main types of review of the information that exists in the system. It's when they look at the system overall, which they call systematic review, to see if it is effective, and this most of the time is done when a new president comes into office. You would know that the last executive order, which has since been changed by President Barack Obama, had actually been issued by the former president, George W. Bush. You'd also know that as part of that order, there was an extension of the powers of the use of interception into the domestic field, which historically had not existed in the case of the United States of America. And some of these things, the new order has actually repealed and has sought to address some of the issues pertaining thereto. Chairperson, I would like then to move on to the case of Canada. What is it that is safeguarded? Because they move away from the concept of classification. They prefer to use the concept of safeguarded information. Information which is received in confidence from a government of a foreign state or an institution thereof, information received from an international organization of state or an institution thereof, the government of a province or an institution thereof, municipal or regional government established by or pursuant to an act of the legislature of a province or an institution of such a government, or an aboriginal government. The above information may be disclosed with the approval of the relevant authority, or if authorities make the information public. Sorry, it's not may. Make the information public. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to circulate background number 12 for the benefit of members, because there are certain issues that I refer to in the slides that will follow, but I really would like them to have the benefit of the entire background for purposes of ease of reference in the future. So the main aim of safeguarding is to ensure that past and current confidential sources of information, intelligence or assistance to the government of Canada is protected. They safeguard places, persons, groups or entities that were or are intended to be targets of COVID collection efforts by the government of Canada. They safeguard the identity of any person engaged in such COVID collection activities. They safeguard plans for certain military operations. They safeguard the means the government uses to protect information, including encryption and any vulnerabilities, and they protect similar information to the above that relates to or is received from foreign entities or terrorist groups. So they don't only protect their own information, they also protect information pertaining to other entities, which when accessed could create a problem of a national security nature. They also protect information whose disclosure could reasonably be expected to be injurious to the conduct by the government of Canada of federal provincial affairs. With your permission, Chairperson, I just need to highlight that for those who may not be aware, and I know that most honorable members, if not all, are aware of the tension that has actually existed between the federal government and some of the provinces, notably Quebec, and the desire in some of the quarters to be involved in what has been labeled cessation. And it is those kinds of issues that have now made them to be very sensitive about provincial, federal provincial affairs, and therefore to make sure that specific measures are taken to protect that information in order to avoid foreign influence on those issues of a political nature that they are dealing with internally. And so they, in this regard, make sure that they take measures to protect federal provincial consultations or deliberations or strategies and tactics adopted to, or rather to be adopted by the government of Canada relating to the conduct of federal provincial affairs. Chairperson, they seek to ensure that information that could be injurious to the conduct of international affairs, the defense of Canada, or any state allied or associated with Canada, or the detection, prevention, or suppression of subversive or hostile activities, including, without restricting the generality of the foregoing, any such information. Let me, Chairperson, in light of the overlapping issues that are covered here, as in the case of the United States of America, then jump, Chairperson, to just quickly focus on some of the new threats that the government of Canada has found necessary to pay particular attention to, and that would relate to the issue of subversive or hostile activities, which is on page 16, the top left-hand slide of your document. In their case, because of the changing nature of global threats, Chairperson, they have found it necessary that definitions that were associated with the Cold War and the immediate post 9/11 period, that they should revisit some of the definitions. In this regard, they have come up with a new concept of subversive or hostile activity. It is not totally new, as many would recall, that in the old South Africa we also had some definitions pertaining to subversive activities that existed in our statute book, but they sought to modernize some of those and put them within a human rights perspective. So in their definition, subversive or hostile activities means espionage against Canada or any state allied or associated with Canada. It sabotage activities directed towards the commission of terrorist acts, including hijacking in or against Canada or a foreign state, activities directed towards accomplishing government change within Canada or foreign states by the use of or the encouragement of the use of force, violence, or any criminal means, activities directed towards gathering information used for intelligence purposes that relates to Canada or any state allied or associated with Canada, and activities directed towards threatening the safety of Canadians, employees of the government of Canada, or property of the government of Canada outside Canada. Chairperson, I would like to then move on to conclude with the slide in the bottom left-hand corner to say that the issue that has been debated on public interest defense is catered for in the Canadian legislation. However, it is not available to everybody. It is especially meant for those who are permanently under secrecy. And so their provision in the Act provides that no person is guilty of an offence under Section 13 or 14 if the person establishes that he or she acted in the public interest. Public interest defense conditions are disclosing an offence under an Act of Parliament, public interest in the disclosure should outweigh the public interest in non-disclosure. Section 13 and 14 is applicable only to persons permanently bound to secrecy, and so too is the defense. I would like to bring the attention of honorable members to the background that I've actually given, which actually goes into detail in addressing a number of the issues of concern and some of the problematic issues can also be dealt with in detail during the question and answer session if it should be necessary. But I found the document to be a very useful reference. In concluding, we would like to look at the case of Macedonia. And in this instance, Chairperson, just to again underscore that they classify information pertaining to public security, defense, foreign affairs, security, intelligence, and counterintelligence activities of the organs of the state government of the Republic of Macedonia. They protect systems, appliances, projects and plans of importance to the public security, defense and foreign affairs, scientific, research and technological, economic and financial affairs of importance to the Republic of Macedonia. There again, they distinguish who can classify. State secrets can only be assigned by the President of Macedonia, the President of the Parliament of Macedonia, the President of the Government of the Republic of Macedonia, and the President of the Constitutional Court, the President of the Supreme Court of Macedonia, the ministers within the scope of operation of their ministries, the public prosecutor, the chief of the headquarters of the army, the director of the intelligence agency, the director of the Directorate for the Security of Classified Information, as well as persons with written consent given by the people listed above. Persons empowered by law and those empowered by international agreements or other regulations are also allowed to classify information as a state secret. The information, again, in the case of Macedonia, is classified at the point of creation. It is upgraded at the point of designation as a state secret by the empowered person. It is reclassified by the creator or a successor of the creator, which means that if there has been a change in a given post, the next person has the power to do the classification, and another person who is a supervisor of those with the power to classify. Again, the information is classified inside and outside Macedonia in keeping with the provision of the Macedonian law on the exchange of classified information. Chairperson, although we were intending to go live, and I think we're at the point where we should then conclude. Chairperson, allow me to conclude by again just restating a few issues. The first part of the presentation provided an overview of the international best practices. Some may actually ask the question, what informs this international best practice? First, Chairperson, as I've already pointed out, guided by our constitution, we have looked at international instruments adopted by the United Nations and the African Union, to which South Africa is a signatory, which then sets the limits or guidelines for the restriction of the right of access to information. And these include, amongst others, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and in the case of the African Union, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. Chairperson, we have, in that overview, referred to international best practice arising from jurisprudence which has been put together by various experts using the Johannesburg Principles on National Security and Access to Information. We have also looked at the very first document which has actually been put together looking at issues of national security and the right of access to information written by Toby Mendel from one of the non-governmental organizations in the United Kingdom. It's an international NGO which is involved in the promotion of right of access to information. Having said that, Chairperson, I think it's important to underscore what I said at the beginning. Not two countries have got the same history and challenges. And so when we look at the international best practices, it is important for us, understanding the broad provisions of our constitution and legislation, that we look at what would best serve South Africa and learn from some of those experiences. And lastly, Chairperson, the individual case studies sought to demonstrate that the issues we are grappling with pertaining to the protection of information on the one hand and ensuring access on the other are international issues that people on the African continent and elsewhere in the world are currently engaging with. And as I indicated, there are more than 86 countries that have now looked at this question and have put in place different regimes, which this presentation has provided a broad outline of, in order to help honorable members in considering the bill that is before them. Once again, Chairperson, I thank you and I thank all the honorable members for their attention. Thank you.
There is a little situation. I've been told that there is a group of people who have been attending this meeting routinely from the open organization, and they've been stopped at the control point, and they've been told that they can only come in the city permission from the speaker, which is obviously not the rule under which parliament operates. So I'm not sure whether you wish to proceed with the matter.
Parliament on access and to the rules that study can put access, and this is so very simple. deliberate the labor issue. Let's continue with our work, but let's find out what you have to say. Someone can go and find out. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Are there
best practice. I mean, it would be nice to have access to the information relating to the assassination of Kennedy 50 years ago, or to the non-indictment of Osama bin Laden that George Bush promised to release 10 years ago. And then those relations of national security, which in America is a racist. I would like to see, for instance, the experiences of Germany, Italy, and Spain, that these are three countries which experience the hard side of fascism and the secrecy on which the fascist state were built, and they adopted more liberal approaches towards secrecy. The third point goes to the details of this presentation. I mean, I know something about the U.S. system, and I find this presentation helpful and unhelpful at the same time, because there are broad stroke presentations in a field in which the devil really is in the details. And for instance, again, dealing with the U.S. system without dealing with the different layers of classification powers, and without dwelling on the nature of the concept of national security and the lack of justiciability and judicial review of this concept, it doesn't really portray the core of how the system works. So the three questions: best practices are good enough, countries, why you chose those, why not the others. The third one, the details: how can we deal with this matter when the details, which is what really matters, are not there.
Thank you, Chukwu, and thank you for the presentation. It was very well done. And as my previous colleague said, there's a lot of useful things, but some issues that I'd also like some clarity on. Let's look at the central issue that a lot of us are going to be looking at, and that is the public interest defense. Let's look at the Canadian model. And my question is, in your comparisons, we are fully aware that the UK had a similar public interest defense and did away with it. The Canadian model has got a public interest defense even for the person that is bound over, the person, the official. What we are looking at and arguing for is a public interest defense for the public or a journalist, which is one removed from that. Can I ask you, in the countries that you've compared, those countries, do they have a similar situation that we've got with CIA, where you've got a mandatory override in terms for the national interest in terms of Section 46 of CIA, even where that disclosure could pose a threat to national security, where public interest overrides that? And that's a very important question. And then secondly, we've also got existing jurisprudence already in South Africa in our public interest defense, where we've got defense for an infringement of privacy, for example, at common law. And you know the court cases, and that's the Sunday Times court case, where even where information can be illegally obtained, it can be necessary to publish it where there is a public interest override. So I'd like you to just comment on that as we're looking at international best practice on the public interest defense. The last issue is the issue of Germany, which you said you'd be doing some further research on. Germany and Canada are very close to our constitutional model, so I'd be interested whether you were able to find any further information on the issue of Germany and what is their regime, particularly when it comes to the public interest defense. Thank you, Chair.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Jefferson, let me start by saying that there is a lot written about the subjectivity of objectivity. And some of the questions really that are being asked are more in the field of policy choices that are going to be made. Really, I am not a policymaker. I am only a public servant who has been given a mandate to do something. Now, I really, with your kind permission and the understanding of members, would request that I should not be drawn on the debates about policy choices. I can present what the menu is like. I can present the menu and talk to the menu, which is what I'm going to do. But some of the questions, Chairperson, really put me on a... They really are making me walk the plank. And I, with all due respect and with all humility, I am requesting that on that field where I am having no power or jurisdiction, that I not be led into temptation of speaking on things I'm not quite able to speak about. I thought I should say that, Chairperson, in the quest of putting a helpful presentation to the committee, Chairperson, I said we've looked at a number of jurisdictions. On the African continent, for example, you've got the case of Sierra Leone, you've got the case of Liberia, you've got some very good work that has been done in Uganda. The biggest problem we face is that some of these laws are only laws, only on paper at the moment. There is no history of meaningful implementation. And you take a country like Zimbabwe, it has all these laws. It's got the access to right of access to information law. It's got the protection of information law. When you go into the implementation in the last few years, there are challenges that we all know about that we then need to be reflecting about. So the choice really in the final analysis was really guided by a number of issues that were raised during public hearings, number one. A number of these cases we chose and talked to some of the issues purely for purposes of helping members benefit. I would be the first one to say that in these case studies, I can do a PhD dissertation only on Canada. Only on Canada. Because what I've not done on Canada, I just dealt with the federal system. But every province in Canada has got a right of access to information law. They've got a number of documents that guide the implementation. So when I go into the detail, and the Honorable Member is correct in saying the devil is in the detail, so with the amount of time we had, it was not possible to then do a provincial comparison, for example, what is the strength, and I could not see the immediate benefit of going into that detail for the kinds of issues the committee was dealing with. And so I agree that in some areas I deliberately opted for broadness rather than detail in order to be relevant to what I believed are the core issues of concern to the committee. When I was working in CIFA, Chairperson, I was taught an expression that really gave me a little bit of a problem to come to terms with. And that expression is that we must always strive to do better than our best. Now, the best practice to apply that lesson, Chairperson, best practice is not an end state. It's not a destination, it is part of the trip. Things improve at all times. If you think that you are the best and do not strive to improve and to look at new lessons, and you actually are going to be left behind. There are a number of companies that went under because they thought they were the best in the computer field, and they thought that they were not going to look at best practices and look at new fields and new arenas. So in short, in answering that question, I think we must continue to strive to be better than our best, not just our best, but also to be the best, because that too is a noble ideal to strive for. As I said, Chairperson, during the last presentation. The choice of the countries really was to try and accommodate some of the concerns of the members. Why Macedonia? Because it looked at the issue of classification after 9/11, and it looked at other issues that were of concern to them, and a lot of the issues pertaining to technology, for example. I have found that they actually have taken on board a number of those kinds of issues. Canada, everybody who came to make public hearings was referring at one point or another to the Canadian model, and I thought that we needed to speak to that. But also, in a number of the presentations, people did not acknowledge that they were quoting from the executive order, which was issued by President Barack Obama. In a number of them, they're actually quoting word for word from that executive order, and I felt that it would be relevant to talk to the case of the USA. And then the case of the United Kingdom, that is where it all started, Chairperson. And I thought that it would be an error. The first people to come up with the protection of information law, that is the Official Secret Act. So it was quite important that we reflect on that. I had actually, in the research that I have done, looked at the first country to ever have a right of access to information law, but I found that it does not have a clause in the Constitution which makes the right of access to information a constitutional right, and therefore I felt to focus a lot on it would not actually be helpful for us, because we wanted to do this within a human rights perspective. At the last meeting, Chairperson, I did allude to the fact that in reality there are a number of very good new practices that you find in unlikely spaces such as China. And I did underscore that it is important that when you are studying these, you do not approach them from an ideological perspective, but you look at what is there on the ground, what is it that is useful, what is it that is forward-looking, and seek to provide the benefits thereof to South Africans. Yeah, I think that the last part of the question I've also partly dealt with in terms of the details and the unhelpfulness. I believe that that's an accurate statement, because I have not gone into the details. So if you want details, the document is really not intended for that purpose, and it is not going to be helpful. But we can engage to provide further support where support is needed. But the key guide was to be relevant to the work of the committee. Chairperson, on the issue of public interest defense, I also want to really underscore what I said earlier on. This question was posed at the previous meeting, and I did highlight that in various, the first country to have a public interest defense is the United Kingdom, but it later decided to amend the Official Secrets Act to do away with it because of the implementation problem they ran into, the court cases they've had to deal with. I am quite sure that I would be able, Chairperson, to actually circulate. I've got a comprehensive list of references that have been consulted that might be useful if members would really like to zoom in on some of the issues for reference purposes. So that can easily be availed, Chairperson. So it was the first country to include that. It was all encompassing. In the case of Canada, as I said, there is a provision, and the provision is only for those who are permanently bound by secrecy. And I think that the question asked by the Honourable Ambrosini would then come into play at this level. Is this best practice good enough? That is the question that Honourable Members have to grapple with. But the state of affairs, if I'm talking about the as-is situation, is as I have put it on the table, and I'm not able to make any comment on the policy issue pertaining thereto. I thank you, Chairman.
the question that the Honorable Swati was, whether there were other pious looking around, whether I had that in mind.
Yes, Chairperson. In a number of these dispensations, there actually is. Let me give a simple example. In the case of the Organization of American States, they've actually come up with a model law. This model law is what guides them in the implementation. A number of countries that actually came up with the right to information laws modeled their laws with acknowledgement from our legislation. In actual fact, in about three conferences that I've attended last year where we were debating some of these issues, I would like to note specifically a number of non-governmental organizations from India that participated there, that South Africa continues to be a positive force of influence in the work that they are doing in India, and in their quest to promote access to information, they forever do a reference to the experiences that we are having. And they were really to keep appealing that they are watching the development in this space with a great and a keen interest, because it would have implications for a process that is currently underway in India, where they are seeking to update their right of access to information legislation. So yes, in many jurisdictions, there is a common clause similar to that. I offered to give the offer.
My question about Germany was, you last time indicated you could do research on Germany as to broadly the issue of what you hadn't found any information yet, and I'm interested about the public interest in Germany and other related matters, and I just asked you about that, and you just, I don't know if you answered, you might have been.
Chairperson, I said I am going to provide further information generally and references, because I've had, as I said the last time, we found documentation, some is still being translated, so I do not readily have the information, but I do have the references, and I can make a list of references for those who are interested available. I thought I answered the question by saying that we must forever strive to be better than our best, and so we need to look at what it is that is going to advance and not put us back to those kinds of problems that the world has faced before. Thanks.
My question was, why don't we look at Italy, Germany, and Spain? Germany was picked up by the Honorable 2 hours ago, as part of.
On the record of Parliament, the Prime Minister not even the address, information out and examples of the administration here. So I would like the document to be updated to me in terms of everything as the reference to you, both for the records of Parliament and for the interest of those who might want to study or use our committee document as reference for study of law or any other. I have two in fact, I want to start by saying that last week we said this was a mission in the group, and I hope we got some testing from the estimate saying that it was a very useful and helpful presentation. I have two questions. The issue of being informed to secrecy, yes, the document informs us of the length of classification in terms of information, but it doesn't tell us of the person that carries the information, that has the privilege of accessing classified information. For how long is this person sworn to secrecy in these various cases? Is it for life? Is it until for what period of time? I'm raising this question for two reasons. In South Africa, we have had scenarios where DG, not only DG, various people, my concern was DG, but also people enter the system and get the privilege of receiving classified information, exit of the information, go to wherever they want to and do whatever they want to the information without being killed in terms of for how long and when can they divulge the information that is received by virtue of the having been either the classifier or the recipient of classified information. The other example that makes me wonder is what's happening in North Africa and in the India currently, where you find high-level inspections, high-ranking inspections from the military, from the diplomatic corps, from politicians. And if you have scenarios like those, where people are not legally bound to remain sealed or tied for a period of time, then they would, while they are in the system, they would abide by the laws of classification. But then they could have the freedom to once they get them and use that information to their own advantage or to the disadvantage of the state or the disadvantage of the my second question, Chair, relates to the presentation did not tell us anything about much about systems. For instance, if I may take the issue of review, it tells us the review period, review campaign, but it did not enlighten us much about the systems that are necessary for the entire process of classification, de-classification, the QR, etc. So I don't know if there's anything for that, and if you would be asking someone to request me and release in terms of the, what are the things that would be prevalent in those examples that are in the business. Last question. I don't think that, I'm not saying you gave us too less or you could have given us more, or I'm not questioning the case that you gave us. But I'm sure Brazil and India and immense economies have been very helpful, but I accept what you have given us for the fact that they are immense economies. And being an immense economy, you are facing the challenge of protecting your economy in terms of growth, etc., etc. And coming to Zimbabwe, I don't think that the criteria that
the law in paper should be the criteria to decide whether it is a different or absolute. In fact, contrary to your argument, every document, I think that Zimbabwe, the fact that Zimbabwe's economy is not finally melting down, and the fact that Mugabe could continue to prosper, could be like, and nobody is listening, and nobody is talking at all, everybody is keeping basically the country, could be an interesting thing for us to see what extent there is in terms of classification and guaranteeing of competitive positions in the
Chairperson, honorable members, thanks once more. Chairperson, I did indicate when it comes to reference now, when I was making my last intervention, that I'm going to make a full list of references available, including things that are not contained in the presentation, but that one had an opportunity of looking at. I will provide websites where more information can be garnered, and then I would also there put in references to laws of the different countries. All of those websites would actually help you to have a full understanding, especially if you are able to read many languages, Spanish, Portuguese, Russian, etc., German, and all of those. So it is part of work in progress. I actually was having a little bit of a debate when to circulate this, because when questions are asked, then you then go back and you look at your list, you find that what was in the previous list of references is no longer all encompassing, and so it remains live. That's why I thought that maybe at the end of the presentation we can then give the final list of references. But I apologize for any inconvenience caused by the non-circulation of the list of references beforehand. The chairperson, with regard to the time frame, they vary from dispensation to dispensation. In the case of Canada, people are sworn to secrecy for their entire life. But being sworn to secrecy may entail, if you want to publish a book, going through such processes. For example, I think because the same process is also found in the case of the United Kingdom. I am sure that honorable members would be quite familiar with the big debate that was caused in the case of the United Kingdom by the book which was being written by the former Director General of one of their services, Stella Remington, who, after serving as the Director General, felt that she could document her experiences. There was a little bit of a problem, but ultimately the issue was resolved and the book was published. But the other book, like Spycatcher, which was published in the United States of America, but they fought till a decision was made by the European Court, which allowed for that to be done in the case of the UK. So again, there are differences. I must say that one of the main issues in the more open system is that they normally have a cooling period, that you cannot, within maybe 5 years, in other instances 10 years, of leaving office be involved in anything related, in any business or endeavor that is closely related to your previous work. So in most, unless you are given express permission by the organization or state organ concerned. So that would be basically the kind of variation that exists. There are people who are permanently sworn to secrecy, who would never be allowed to speak subject to them applying, but if you don't apply, you then be sworn to secrecy for life. And if you don't go through the said processes, you would then be prosecuted. And there are a number of cases where such has actually happened in other countries. We have not done that in the case of South Africa, although our law, especially when it comes to the intelligence services, it does provide for that. The issue of system, Chairperson, I have tried when answering the question to go into detail. For example, when I started the presentation, I started by pointing out that people look at the entire process of the creation of information up to a point of its destruction. That the laws that they put in place cater for every eventuality in that process, from the generation or receipt of information to the destruction of the information. And I talked, I think, in the last meeting when one of the honorable members had asked the question about the review, I had actually indicated that there are various systems of review. There is internal review, which is done inside the organization, ensuring that whoever is classified is not involved in the process of reviewing the decision made on whether the information should be classified or not. I went on to point out that where ministers have got that responsibility of making the final decisions, their decisions are reviewable by the courts, and that that's part of the international best practice. This is an overview, Chairperson. It is only when I am asked to say, what is the system in Canada, then I can give you the details of how the system operates. When you ask about what the system is in the Czech Republic, then you know one can zoom in and then talk specifically about that system and how some of these issues are actually dealt with. It is for this reason, Chairperson, that I emphasize that the instruments that have been put in place and some of the documents that have been written on international best practice are very helpful, because not only do they tell you what needs to be in the system and what are the key elements of making the system work, they also enable you to then say what is best that you would want to learn from it, that you would want to implement in the case of South Africa. And that's why I strongly feel that for those who would want the detail, the references would be quite helpful for them to be able to then zoom in whatever system they would want to have information on it. Unfortunately, it is part of the issue that has been correctly raised by honorable member. That is the detail which is devilish from the expression. Chairperson, at one of the ad hoc committee meetings, one of the honorable members had raised the issue of BRICS. Now, I'm quite familiar with all the BRIC countries, but at the time when that issue was raised, I had already been given the go-ahead with the framework I had prepared by the minister. And so I can only address those issues of the BRICS from a question and answer perspective. But I can just summarize that in the case of Brazil, they have just adopted a right of access to information law in 2010. It has not yet been implemented. In the case of India, they are currently going through a process of reviewing their law of access to information. China, I spoke about in passing at the last meeting, and I've also made reference to it, that they also got the right of access to information law, and they've come up with some very innovative ideas insofar as the management of sensitive information and institutions that I'm sure we could study further and provide more information about that. Which one? And in the case of Russia, there is some work that is being done. There are lots of fights about the extent to which their right of access to information law should go, and there are a number of challenges. That's why I also felt that if you look at the Czech Republic, Macedonia, and other countries, they reflect on what their historical experience is, and that historical experience I found very useful for lessons that can inform us as a country on which way we want to go forward. Chairperson, on the issue of Zimbabwe, I would like those comments I've made. It is a policy field that I am not competent to partake in.
Thank you.
trying to know a little bit more. Sometimes it does come across as you
the UK is the name of secrecy, and it is the last term one to emulate, so I'm glad that you're in. You have been of historical interest. So two of the wrong, but after that I'd like to talk to us, because he's right, he's not here, so we do in fact have an existing person in our side, but it seems that it's on fire. It's in the fire. You remember that? And it's agreed to begin to public sabotage terrorism. And Chairman, what I found was useful about the presentation is the following. It shows us, especially now in the two examples on which was the global concentrator, the US and Canada, it shows us how restricted is the what information are we classifying. And then secondly, how restricted is the food question we classify. And by saying that the what is restricted, I refer of course to, under the case of the USA, bottom right 12, military plans, weapon systems, foreign government information, intel activities, including covert, intelligence sources, weapons, brutality, foreign relations, scientific, technological, economic matters, vulnerabilities of systems, installations, infrastructure, etc. Another Canadian, if we discount the federal stuff, which as you say, sprang from the Quebec petitionist impulse, because no one in their right mind is otherwise going to classify intergovernmental relations, which in our case anyway governed by the constitution. In the case of Canada, the what question is answered by similar things. Military tactics is spread 15 comrades. Military tactics, quantity characteristics, capabilities to go to the weapons, characteristics, capabilities, blah 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 blah, military forces of now. And to the rest of that situation that could be injurious to the property of national affairs. Defense of Canada, any state allied with, and so on and so forth. Scientific, technical, related communications with the walk of the graphic system. That's the kind of stuff that this tool is supposed to be about. And it is useful to look at these two comparative tools. It's also useful to look at who classifies. In the case of the U.S., the president, the vice president, the agency heads, the officials designated by the president, officials delegated to classify, and delegation is limited to the minimum, and delegated officials must show a demonstrable and continuous need to classify, and they get trained at least once every 2 years. So it is limited. The people who may classify, stuff you may classify, the people who may classify. In Canada, who classifies? Where is Mr. Bill? It's a similarly a set of people and their enemies, okay? Where is the Canada?
Thank you.
disregarding the person that we have brought here today and for the purpose of which we have come here. Can I perhaps call on you to park your comments in this regard? You have a question for the... I know I have allowed comments to be made by some of the honourable members, but I see you're getting into far more detail. And so I'm just wondering, for some members might still want to go to the other meetings, and I was wanting to stick to the time period that we had advertised or that we agreed upon. So if you have a question, honourable member, I will allow you to take this debate further. And I see where you're going to. So perhaps when we do get to dealing with a presentation, and there is time slots for that, when we as a committee will debate amongst ourselves the value of the presentation, I think it would be more appropriate than we hear you at that particular time. So you've got a question?
Yeah.
I think you have got a question there. Is this got nothing to do with intelligence and security? I think that's what the Honourable Member said. Do you agree with that? I think you said that this has got nothing to do with...
Read your list. Why do you hear your list?
I find within that a question which I think the presenter can answer. Unless it wasn't a question.
It wasn't a question, actually. But Chairman, may I just respond to you? Mr. Norman has made quite clear, more than one, that he cannot answer members with policy. It's not his function. And therefore, what must I ask him? He's not asking
him. Oh, no.
That's
not getting the argument. I'm saying if you have got a question, put it to him.
Otherwise,
and then we will debate amongst ourselves at the appropriate time the value of the presentation.
But, with respect, I thought this meeting was to conclude the presentation and then to debate it.
Yes, but we're still busy asking to present the question.
I thought that was
exhausted. No, I've got a list here. I've got the Honourable Smash and Ganyano, and then I've got the Honourable Mentor wanting to put more questions on my list. So if you will allow me, if you don't have a question, to move on to some of the Honourable Members that do have questions. And then, if there's time left, we will get to the meeting. Can I move on, Honourable Members?
Well, when will that stop picking up the Honourable? But secondly, you say
Member,
there
please.
Was a time frame indicated on the notice of this meeting. I have no such notice. What is the time frame? No.
What hour?
Oh, you mean six?
Honourable Member, can I move on to the question?
Yeah.
Honourable Smutsigan now, sorry.
Look, Chair, my question is very basic. I may have missed some of the input. Based on the case that is presented to us, is there any standard set by multilateral institutions on which most of the cases that we have are actually based on? And because it will actually make things very easy if there are such standards that are set. And basically that's my question. And maybe relating to that is the rigidity or softness of such standards. And the
The Honourable Mr. Duma.
The Chairperson, yes, in the first part of the presentation that we presented, the Honourable Chairperson would recall that we actually provided a broad overview of the international system. In the slide, I think there's a specific slide which deals with the various instruments that provide the broad guidelines. And today I made really a passing reference to only two of them. But they are on page 4, the second slide on the right-hand side. It talks to the international instruments, that is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, and then, of course, for other continents, you would find, among others, the American Convention on Human Rights and the American Declaration of Rights and Duties of Man, in the European Convention on Human Rights, amongst others. They need not exhaust it here. They actually set the ground for the restriction of the right of access to information. I have since indicated that the institution, Article 19, has come up with the best practice when it comes to the right to know, and has been the first to publish, driven by international and national jurisprudence of various countries, lessons learned from there, and then does spell out some of those. And more recently, I have indicated chairpersons that the Johannesburg Principles on national security and access to information are the latest best practice. The weakness of the latter document is that it has not yet been subjected to serious scrutiny and study by any of the international organizations that South Africa is party to. It is a document really that has been put together by non-governmental organizations and independent experts. There is currently a process which will take place here in South Africa next month in April, where there would be a review of that document and other documents that have been produced with a view to coming up with new best practices on this issue. And some of us have been invited to participate in it. Thank you.
I was going to make an observation that we came a long way, and but then you made a comment or a ruling kind of on Honorable Dinsmar's input. Because I was, whereas I agree with you, Chair, I think I'm struggling with the fact that whilst we touch on policy issues that Mr. Dongo cannot respond to, it is helpful that he hears the policy issues we tread upon so that he sits back to the minister and he understands the arguments and the areas we are studying on as we prepare to go on the final way in terms of it. It looks like we are reaching, as you are observing, a critical point where we are capable of moving forward in terms of doing the discussions and deliberations by ourselves. It might be again that just before we finish, we might need wisdom again from the department of from the minister. So I would think that his sitting in our meetings is crucial. If I'm out of order, you must rule me out of order, Chair. We've traveled such a long way, which was very difficult. And I think, for me, there is now one major area, as advocates for reasons, where we need to deal with, to find one another, and to reach the completion of the task and report to National Assembly by the time we are expected to report. The issue of public interest override. I wonder in your wisdom, Chairperson, whether you think that it is one area we need to talk to one another about. Find one another. And for me, that it looks like it's the one last sticky point where we need to talk to one another about. I don't know. I'm not trying to map the agenda for the committee going forward, but I think there's an area that if we go over, it will be much more easier for us to finalize the task.
Agreed.
Because I think we, on the whole, we are converging. Somebody's phone is doing something here, and it's fake, this case.
Mr. Smart? your phone is disturbing me, and it's somebody from my province.
Well, you finish, Honourable Member.
He disturbs me. No, I'm just saying. I was just saying, I'm asking you, Chair, to go and think about my thoughts, whether I'm out of order. But I think once we deal with that, I foresee that we'll be able to do what we are supposed to do, concluding the process of very fast.
Honourable Member, thank you. I think the question of the public interest to say that it is a loss, it is an issue. We have had people raise it as an issue. We have debated it a number of times. And to say that it is a loss, sticky point, I'm not so sure whether that's accurate. I think we need to, once we finish all the presentations, get down. Sometimes my ears itch and I So, yes, sir.
Honourable Member, my ear is quiet. It means we are coming to conclusion. I didn't say it today. It was very, very quiet.
Honourable Members, let me just, since there's no further questions, then that's good. Let me just check with the Honourable Abrasini. Are you in a position to make this 5-minute presentation now, Honourable Member? Because I think now is actually quite a good time.
I am, if I can have 5 minutes of undivided attention.
Fine. As from now, your presentation will stop at 4:00.